I want to ask you to turn to the book of Proverbs, chapter 3, tonight. Now, I've given you just the outline of chapter 1 and chapter 2. Basically, this is what we've gone through. The first chapter was an introduction to God's wisdom. And then the second chapter, I've entitled Incentives to Pursue Wisdom. Now, the third chapter, he gets into just some specific guidelines for the young are teaching some basic wisdom to this young man. Remember, Solomon is teaching his son, Rehoboam. And here are some tremendous guidelines or teachings or statements of wisdom to this young man. And so I want to look at them just one by one. And the first of those is that a wise father's words lead to a long and peaceful life. Solomon declares to his son, if he will listen and he will follow and obey what he's taught, that it will lead to a long and peaceful life. Verse 1, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Now remember, the Proverbs are principles. The Proverbs are statements of truth. They're statements that are not meant to be absolute. And I've used the illustration from Proverbs 22, verse 6. In Proverbs 22, verse 6, the Bible says to train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Now that is meant to be a communication of a truth, but it's never meant to be an absolute statement. So we don't have to look for answers to why it doesn't always happen. We as parents do not always have to blame ourselves when one of our children come up short. We've done what the Bible teaches. But that child still has a will and can still make a decision of its own. But it is a general rule that if you train a child right, that's the way he'll go. And so we have those kind of statements. Like here, if this child will listen to the law of his father, if he'll not forget it, if he'll remember, if he'll keep it, if he'll obey it, the result of that will be a life of peace, a life of blessing, and a long life. Certainly there are exceptions to that, aren't there? There's a large number, if you add it all up, of people in the world through the years who have been righteous, who have died young. That's just a simple truth. It doesn't violate this. This is a proverb. It's a principle. It's a general truth. That's the point. And you've got to see it like that. You look at these proverbs and you read them to understand that this is a general truth. That's all it is. And because the skeptic reads this without understanding what a proverb is, and he says, well, I can prove that's not true, because I know somebody who obeyed what their father said, who kept what their father said, who did not forget the rules of his upbringing, and yet he died very young. Well, that's just a failure to understand the proverbs. It's a general rule. And remember what he's talking about here. He's not talking about, first of all, the law of God. Although I think it is assumed that the Father is teaching the moral principles of the Bible. But what he's talking about here is a parent who is actively instructing a child from his youth in morals and in right principles. And always in the Bible, it begins in the home. Good children are generally the product of good homes. If you're counting on the school to produce great children, forget it. And I don't mean just the public school. I'm talking about the Christian school. You send your child to a Christian school, you better remember one thing. Every child in that school has a depraved nature. And anymore, the Christian schools is almost an exclusive club. By that I mean
The average person, they can't afford it. It costs a lot of money. And people assume if they send their child to a Christian school, that's going to produce Christians. First of all, you have to be very careful because some overzealous teacher try to convert them by the time they're 3 years old. It's an exaggeration, I know. But instead of letting God work in people's hearts, then people think, wow, I'm going to homeschool my kid, and that is just a might near guarantee they'll turn out right. No, you can teach them home, teach them math, and all of those things. If you aren't actively instructing them in morals and righteousness and the truth of God, and not only teach them by word, but by example, you're not going to produce. Well, you say, well, I'm going to take them to Sunday school and church. Well, that's a good thing to do, but don't count on 40 minutes, which equals probably about 25 minutes of Sunday school, to give your child instruction. The whole thing here in Proverbs is a father, watch it, who is a king, no doubt a busy man, a very wealthy man, a very powerful man, and yet he's taking the time to take this little Rehoboam and instruct him in morals and in righteousness and plead with him, don't forget what I'm telling you. And keep it. And if you listen to me, and you remember what I'm telling you, you'll have a peaceful life. And you'll have a long, successful life. You mark that down. That's just a tremendous truth and principle. One thing, if a child lives that way, he's going to avoid the foolish things that destroy your lives. Our lives. We don't have to learn by the school experience. Only fools insist on learning by the school of experience. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's already been made. Don't waste your time about that. Somebody figured that out. You don't have to reinvent the combustion engine. Somebody's already figured that out. And I'm going to tell you something. Somebody's already figured out how to raise children. And we have fools that are trying today to reinvent the wheel. They're trying to reinvent the combustion engine. That's basically what they're doing. They're trying to figure out how to raise kids. It's already been figured out. It's in this book. Get a hold of that. That was worth coming to church for, that illustration right there. Yes. You never know. Take it home with you. And so he teaches this general rule. Look at the second one. Mercy and truth will bring you into favor with God and man. Let not mercy and truth, verse 3, forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. And so shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Now here he emphasizes mercy and truth. And he says that these will bring you into favor with God and man. Get a hold of that. He's teaching his son. It's important to have God's favor upon your life. But I'll tell you something else. It's important to have the favor of others upon your life. And this world, that's what they strive after. You ever work with these people that spend all their time buttering up the boss? Don't they make you sick? They make you sick. You know, just getting as close and bragging and what, you know, the world, how they look at that and talk about that. But I've worked with people like that, some of the sorriest workers I've ever worked with. Spent all their time looking for when the boss would come and buttering the boss up almost always at the price of the person they worked with. You know, what you speak against. And when I watch people, when I start doing business with people, if they start talking about someone else, I just back up right there. Let work ought to stand for itself. They don't have to tell me that. And I've not gone to churches. I had a church years and years ago. Bettendorf, Iowa, 100% vote. And tried to say, I don't know how I got 100% vote. They were desperate, I suppose. But you know, I was there 3 days. Aside from never being warm, the whole time I was there, it was a windy call, you can have all that. It was like a tornado all weekend with sub-zero weather, it seemed like. I never was warm. But I listened for 3 days. them criticizing the last man. And I thought, you know, it's just a matter of time before it's me they're doing that too. And I'm up here in Iowa where it's cold. I could be down in the south where it's warm. If I'm going to be criticized, I might as well be warm when I'm being criticized. People who tend to try to get to the top by buttering people up, they tend to walk over other people to get there. And that's how the world believes. They believe you lie to get ahead. You slap a person on the back, they slap you on the back. And men constantly, and this will tell you whether you're a real Christian or not, they'll set their Christian ethics and morals aside to gain the favor of somebody. They continually turn their ear away instead of taking a stand. Those around them, they feel no pressure from them. And all they're trying to do is stay in favor with this person because they believe this person somehow holds the key to their success. Now Solomon wants his son to understand the negative of this is you don't have to do all those things to get favor. You do want God's favor and you want man's favor. It does matter what people think about you. By the way, your name does matter. Spend a lifetime building your name. It does matter. But favor from God and man, key. Joseph, that's what he found. Remember that? God was with him and brought him into favor. First with Potiphar. And then brought him into favor with the prison, the jailer. And then brought him into favor with Pharaoh. His brothers sold him as a slave. Potiphar's wife lied about him. Every turn, somebody was doing him wrong. But at every point, Joseph refused to go the wrong way. And what you see again and again and again, God brought him into favor. God gave him favor with these people. And God exalted him. That's the teaching here. That God can bring us into favor. Very important. And we ought to pray that in that sense. If you're in business, pray God give you favor. Well, watch, two things are important to that. Mercy and truth. Your compassion, graciousness, all of that's involved in mercy. A softness about you. A caring. That you do care. And then truth. It's been defined, truth has been defined as the reality that lies at the basis of an appearance. There's you see something and you look at it, and it appears to be something, but when you study it and you bring it right down to its base, its substance, what it really is, that's the truth. Now, hopefully, you and I are always what we appear to be. And we're not hypocrites. And because you have wrong in you doesn't make you a hypocrite, but if you're phony, that does make you a hypocrite. Truth is what lies at the basis of an appearance. You know, you can put something on, any of us can, to appear to be different than we are. But when you examine us, you see, you get down to what we are. That's truth. Truth is integrity. Truth is sincerity. Truth is honesty. Truth, in a sense, is a person that is governed by what is right. Now notice what he says about these things. He says, to hide them in our heart, and write them, he says, on the table of thine heart, and he says, bind them about thy neck. Now think, bind them about thy neck. We put, now men don't, I hope they don't. I don't like men to wear necklaces and earrings. I'm from the generation where that was feminine. They call people sissies for that. And I just be honest with you, I don't like it. If you'd like that, that's fine with you, and that's just a matter of me. I know, because I'm having a hard time adopting to the 21st century, but I don't like it. I don't like tongue rings. And I don't understand people that do. Do you? And I certainly don't understand managers of restaurants that put people with tongue rings over the intercom that you can't understand to start with. And you get up there and you realize why you couldn't understand the person. They got a tongue ring in their mouth. Or take that thing out. But then I've seen them shot up through the eyes, shot up through the nose, shot up every way you can shoot them up. And I just, well, the Bible has a lot to say about that kind of thing, doesn't it? But in a sense, he's thinking about an ornament here. People put things around their neck. One thing to remember them, I suppose, but another thing, as an ornament. You may tie a string around your finger, you don't remember it, see. But you wear a ring, and it shows something. If it's a woman, it's a diamond ring, perhaps, and it's something that's becoming. It draws attention. Well, a necklace does that. It accentuates it. It is like an ornament. You have a tree. It's a wonderful thing. You take an old rugged tree. No, we don't. We use a fake tree. And it was the same every year. So we don't have to take pictures every year. We got one picture from 10 years ago, and we just have it reproduced every year. And, but these people go out in the woods and cut down a tree. If you're of that tradition, and bless your heart, I really admire you. I'm not of that tradition. I'm too lazy. But, you go out and get an old tree, and you take somebody's creative, and they put ornaments on that tree, and before it's better than any store-bought tree. You know that's true, but I'm not going to make the effort. But I'm still trying to figure out why we have Christmas trees, and I haven't figured that out yet. But I don't have any religious conviction against one. I suppose that's true because I got one in my house. And but anyway, not right now. we put it up sometime here at the end of the year. But an ornament. Now watch, you're going to gain favor with God and man. You write the laws of your Father upon your heart. You don't forget it. And the thing, you bind these about your neck. And I'm going to tell you something. Mercy and truth will bring you to respect. I don't know of anybody that respects a liar. I just can't respect a hypocrite. You know, if you're what, be what you are. You know, I got more respect for just an outlaw than I do somebody that's not a man of truth that tries to report to me something. And young people. I crave to see young people that are what they're supposed to be. Don't you? That's what he's saying to his son. Son, be a man of compassion, truth. Mix these two. That's a balance in our life. And really, that's what God wants in our life, isn't it? Balance. You got a man that's just a man of truth. Sometimes he can be like an Old Testament prophet. He's all fire. Well, that's one side. But does he have a heart? That's the compassion. That's grace. And people look upon you, and sooner or later it brings you to the top. And I'm going to tell you, even the men of the world, they get sick. They get sick of that guy that butters people up because he thinks that man holds his destiny in his hands. Here we are as believers. God holds our destiny. God is able to raise us up. Isn't that what Psalm 75 says? God raises. Promotion comes not from the east or the west or the south, but God raises one up and puts down another. That's a wonderful truth. I don't have to worry about advancing myself. It's one thing I don't like about some denominational work. What I mean by that is this. I don't understand the concept that a preacher goes to a church knowing that that church to him is a stepping stone to another church.
And in that church, if you can get a little growth and you can impress somebody, you can take another step. And the idea is you're going to step up the ladder. I would tend to think in this way.
From a pastor's standpoint, let's leave all that to God and invest our life somewhere. And if God wants to do something with us, He will. And you may say, what are you doing preaching to the crowd you're preaching to? One thing, it's a bigger crowd than I could have ever expected to preach to. But another is, all I know to do what I'm supposed to do. To be faithful. God knows my number. And the truth is, I'm right here. My roots are here. And I haven't, don't worry, they're not knocking the doors to get me somewhere else either. But I don't think in terms of something as a church twice this size and I could get there. I wouldn't know what to do if I got there. First thing you'd have is a secretary. What am I going to do with a secretary? I don't know anything about that type thing. I got all my hands around all I can do. Well, anyway, if God blesses, we'll be blessed. But we need not think in terms of promoting ourselves. Thus, apply that to all your areas of life. He says to the young man, mercy and grace, mercy and truth. I wish I had more time with that. Third thing he says is God will direct our ways if we will trust and acknowledge Him in all our ways. These two verses are many people's life verses. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. And I think there's a lot of key right in that statement. But underscore all thine heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding. These two things answer to each other. And the third area, verse 6, it answers to what's above it. In all thy ways acknowledge Him. When he says, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding, he explains this by verse 6. In all thy ways, acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy paths. Now, boy, that's a wonderful promise. God will direct our paths. Watch this. In your life, there are not many, life-changing moments. What I mean, drastic life-changing moments. There weren't in Abraham's life. There weren't in David's life. There weren't in many of the apostles' lives. You look back. How many times God moved Abraham to go another direction? Look at Jacob. God moves him one way. 20 years later, God moves him back. And then a period of time later, He moves him back over to Bethel. Just a few life-changing moments. Most of life is living day by day the precepts and the principles of God where you are. And in your life, He says, God will direct you. I would tell you this about life. I'm at 48, I don't have all the answers to life, but I do believe this. Things are very critical. Big moves. Big moves are critical. I can tell you that in my life, when I was 12 years old, we lived in Michigan. And you can say, thank God you got out of there, but you shouldn't talk like that. But I can tell you this. The move from there to here, the ramifications of that move are immeasurable. In my life, the life of my family, and nobody knows what would happen had we stayed there, but I know what's happened here. That I married who I married. I cannot even begin to estimate how important that move was in my life. But there's only 4 or 5 moving moments even to this point in my life. And what I realize now is if I make a move right now, whatever direction I go, it affects a lot of people, but especially it affects my immediate family. People ought to be so. You got a child in high school, 11th or 12th grade. You ought to be very mindful as you decide to pick up and go 3 states over.
You say, well, I can make a dollar more an hour. Weigh that against the effect upon your family. Be very, very careful. And the church you attend, very, very important. Very important. And I'm just saying, the job changes you make. Those are critical things that affect your life. And here is this man. He is not saying, I mean, I was in college
where guys debated whether you should pray over eating a candy bar. And whether you should pray over drinking a Coke. And they debated the ethics of those guys. And in my mind, I'm thinking, something's wrong in this whole scenario. I mean, I got to pray 10 minutes to decide which tie to put on. And that is a big decision. Wouldn't it be simple if we just wore the same tie every time? Don't you think? You're done with it. Then I have to, from my house here, there's at least 10 different ways probably I could get here. And so I'm coming out of my driveway, that's the first decision, is to come out of the left side or the right side. I don't pray about that. No, I decide God wants me to come out of the right side today, so I drive across the yard and the field line. Then I get to the end of the driveway, I can go left and right. I got to pray about that and say, today God wants me to go left. I get down to the crossroads of Billy Wynn and Nelson Road and I pray again, right and left. And each one of those leads to no time. No, that's not what he's talking about, is it? You can go to extremes.
Just apply a practical sense to a lesson like this. In all thy ways, yes, acknowledge Him. Don't lean to your own understanding. Don't think you're so smart or wise
that you can figure it all out yourself, but don't go ridiculous. That's what I'm trying to say. There's an insanity. There's a fanaticism. There's a kind of person that, they're extreme people. I want to be delivered from those people. If you're married that way, I feel for you. I don't mean to criticize it. I mean, it's just a difficult life.
But basically, here I am living this life, and I'm not a self-sufficient person. I'm not going to be a man of pride. Well, I think I know everything. That's what he's saying. But in life, we trust in Him, and in that trust flows out this acknowledgement. Lord, I need to know what you want me to do. You be very, very careful. You make big decisions. I think buying a home is a big decision. That's what neighborhood you live in. That's your debt load. I don't know, a car's not as big a deal, but I certainly, before I laid out $30,000, I'd want to pray about it. And I want to ask somebody, did you pray about that? Did you? That's a pretty big decision. And I don't mean to balance a little over big, but acknowledge that, Lord, show me. And as a family, you're going to come up against it. You're going to come up with decisions for your children. You've got to make those decisions. And I'm telling you, those decisions often go against everybody else in your family. You can just mark that down. Your aunts and uncles, and their voice, they feel like they've got a voice in it. But they don't have a voice in it. They don't have a voice at all in it. You have to make the decision. You do. And it's hard, isn't it? It's hard for all of us. Everybody wanted to tell you how to do. And boy, have I had a lot of folks ready to tell me how to do. But you set the rules. It's like this thing I said, you know, and I'm not the end of all wisdom here, but this overnight business, we do well to get away from that. You lose control.
And he said, but all that would just never be accepted in my family.
Oh, when you get in trouble with your kids, are they going to resolve them all for you? And I'm not saying, no, never stay the night with grandma or whatever. You know what? I think, again, you got some common sense, don't you? You got to deal with it, but you might even have to deal with grandma. Grandma may very well ruin your kids. But I'm going to tell you something. You're talking about all your ways, acknowledge him. I'll be praying for wisdom in this day to raise my kids. And what am I doing? And when you decide what you're going to do with your children, you set you back to the wall. If you determine there's certain things that they're going to do, you say, my kids don't watch Saturday cartoons. I don't want to raise a bunch of smart-mouthed, smart-aleck, worldly-minded kids. And I don't watch it much, but best I can tell, that's what it's about. The world admires that. They admire smart-aleck kids with foul mouths. And so you set your back and you say, whoa, that's where I stand. Whatever. I don't, there's people that determine their kid's not going to eat certain things. Well, in my opinion, that's the parent's decision. You know? He is saying here that God will direct our lives. Let's not be so proud that we think we know everything. And to trust him, and you say, I trust you. Well, to trust him is to acknowledge him. And to say, I need your help in life. And these decisions that I've got to make, Lord, give me guidance and give me wisdom. Now I'll say this to you. That doesn't rule out getting some godly advice. Does it? That would be part of it. I want to get some counsel. This book's going to emphasize this. So when I'm acknowledging him and I'm trusting him, and I'm going to say, I don't know everything. I don't understand everything. Maybe I haven't raised a teenager yet. And you know somebody that has, and they've been successful at it. By the way, if you go ask somebody with teenagers, try to see what their track record is before you ask them. You know what I'm talking about? Find somebody that knows something about it. But this isn't ruled out here. That would be part of not leaning to your understanding. Ask godly people. I'm going to tell you something. Just let you into something. I found through the years, very few people are interested much on my opinion about children. I'm saying that as a personal telling. Because they already know what it is, basically. Very few people that go up and say, preacher, what do you think about this? You know what we tend to do? You watch yourself on this. We tend to go to people that we think are going to tell us what we want to hear. And there are some people that are so vocal, they're ready to tell you. And somehow they give the impression that they're the expert. And so, some of the women, they go to those people, and some of the men, they go to those people. See, I can tell you this, I could give a Brother Moore a star. Brother Moore has two children in ministry, and a third studying to go in ministry. I'd be very interested to know, how do you produce that? When you think that would be an opinion worth knowing something about. See, I listened to Brother Randall. We worked together on this house, the church, over there. And we enjoyed working with him. But Randall, I know both his children, raised two good children. I'm interested. I learned a lot. I was interested, especially at the 40s, when they started talking about the things he did to get their attention about messy rooms and all that stuff. That was very, very interesting to me. I thought, I wish I'd have known that 10 years ago. But I'm interested. How do you produce a John? You know? How do you get Stephanie? So there's advice. One of the things I said a while ago, I remember Brother Randall said, when he had an opportunity to come to to Tennessee from Michigan, you'd think, do anything you can to get out. But he waited till the kids were out of school. I never forgot that. So I'm interested in that. That's the kind of person that when you're not leaning to your own understanding, you're acknowledging the Lord, you're trusting Him. That does not mean that you shouldn't look to some people that could help you. And by the way, the person that can help you the most is he or she is not so happy to tell you. You've got to draw it out of him. That's what the Proverbs teach, even. You've got to draw it out of him. I mean, you've got to work them. I don't know how you do it. Get them for coffee. Get them on enough of it, they'll tell you anything, you know. But most people that really can help you are not so freely ready to speak. That's wise people don't. Wise people hold it in. You got to get it out of them. So this is the principle we're talking about here. God will direct your path. These two verses, we could stay on, as I say, they're life verses for many. But it's a humbleness in this verse. When you trust the Lord, the other side of that is you're not caught up in your own opinion. And then you acknowledge Him. Well, look at the fourth thing. The fourth thing he says is the fear of the Lord will bring great reward. Look at verse 6. 7 through 10, rather. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. That's just a way of describing the blessing that will come to us as they think of the marrow to the bones as soft and brittle, as over opposed to brittle, and the navel, their culture would be different. We might say it'd be health to your heart. But here the navel, the stomach, the well, that man's well there, he's pretty much well everywhere, but he's just talking about it'd be good for you. That's the point he's making. And then he says, to honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty. And thy presses shall burst out with new wine. Now again, that comes from their culture. The farming, the barns. Most of us know nothing about that. And if we did know something about that, we'd know very little about presses and wine vats. But that was very important to them. The producing of wine, fresh wine, new wine, as the problem with water supply. And many of the cultures, it's absolute essential. And the fresh wine becomes a commodity that'll bring great prosperity to people's lives. And so what he's saying here, that the fear of the Lord will bring with it great reward. Health to our being and prosperity to our lives. That's verse 10. Now I say the fear of the Lord, and I take the fear of the Lord in the verse 7, the idea of honoring the Lord and the fear of the Lord go together. The fear of the Lord is a deep reverence and respect. Remember, that's the beginning of wisdom, verse 7 of chapter 1. It's one of the great themes of the book of Proverbs. The fear of the Lord, the respect, the reverence. Now here is a father teaching his son, and he comes back to this theme over and over again. If you're going to live life wisely, you have to live in the fear of the Lord. And how does that work out practically? If you respect the Lord, you honor the Lord. Well, how does that work out? He says, oh, you bring him, look at how he puts it there. You bring him of thy substance. But he doesn't stop there. With the first fruits of all thine substance or increase. I put the word, the underline under that word first fruits. First fruits. Many people tithe or give, but they don't honor the Lord in that. The honor of the Lord is first. That He is first above everything else. That's what honors Him. That's what shows my reverence for the Lord, my respect for the Lord. If a king came in this door, because of who he is, I would rise and show him respect. If he came to my house, yesterday's meatloaf. Well, we got extra meatloaf. I'm not going to give that to the king. That's leftovers. Doesn't Cheryl fix the king something? She says, well, we got leftovers and we got some stuff we brought home in a box from the restaurant. I'll say, Cheryl, he's the king. Surely we can fix him a nice pork chop or a steak. Anything else would be disrespectful, wouldn't it? You know it would. And the fear of the Lord, he says, when you give something to the Lord, you bring him of your substance. You honor him. How do you honor him? Oh, you give him the first, the best. See, you had the ingathering of the crops, the main crop. And then after the crop, they went through for the gleanings. They'd go through the fields and gather the best. But then there was always the gleanings, what was left. Here somebody brings that which is left, second, and gives it to the Lord. See, that's the principle of Malachi 1. He talks in that Malachi 1 of the fear of God, the respect for God, and him being a great king. And he says, you're bringing his offerings to me, the lame and the torn and the sick. In other words, here they have a little lamb or a goat. He said, that thing is sick and we're just going to kill it anyway. Let's take it to the temple. And the priests were accepting that. And he said this in Malachi. He said, I'll tell you what you do. You take that and you offer it to the king. You offer it to the governor. And he said, the governor will not take it. He's not going to accept the lame and the torn and the sick. He said, I am a great king. I won't either. It's an attitude. He's teaching his son. God is a great God. Live in fear of him. It'll be good for you physically. It'll be good for you financially. I'm not preaching the health, wealth, prosperity gospel. I don't believe the health, wealth, prosperity gospel. I don't believe you give God a dime and he gives you a dollar. I believe the whole attitude is wrong, but I do believe this, and I believe history proves it. As a general rule, people who live right before God and do right before God, God's blessed them. Not to be rich, but God supplied their needs and God's been faithful to them. And He satisfied them. God has been that to them. And He's teaching that here. He says, you think the son, you may think the way to have is to hoard it up. But think, you're living life wisely, son. The first thing you should do is in fear of the Lord, give to Him the first fruits. Honor Him with the first of what He's given you. Give Him the best. Don't give Him what's left over. You know, it's like Christmas gifts. You know, and I have to be careful here. I get in trouble with my thinking on this. And you please forgive me. I say the wrong things sometimes. But generally speaking, how many of you wrap up something you're through with and you're tired of and put it under the tree for someone else? But old Uncle Joey, old man, him. You give him something. You'd be amazed through the years. I'm not thinking of anything or anybody, so please forgive me if it is. I've been at this business since I was 20 years old, almost nonstop. I've been a pastor. The
Somebody has a gift for the church most of the time.
It's not the first fruits of what they have. It's leftover junk. And I'm not thinking of anybody. Honestly, I don't know. I wouldn't even allow my mind to think right now. But it would save the church trouble if you'd just carry it to the dump first. You know? And if you're going to give something to the Lord, and I'm not saying there aren't times when you have something that is not of use and it could be used. I've got to be careful there. I've got to be very careful there. I know that. I'm walking on serious, serious ground. But generally speaking, people want to give God the leftovers. The leftovers. And it is like your house. If you have an idea that your house ought to be kept up, what about the church? It's like this. There are people that they are not going to go to Sunday without that grass perfect. And I can appreciate that. But I don't understand any Christian that thinks that way that comes to church and it doesn't bother them if the church grass doesn't look like that. Huh? Come on now. That we, the things of God, take priority, that's what he's teaching. This house is more important than my house. Don't you believe that? Come on now, do you believe it? This is God's house. It's all part of this. He's teaching his son. And we should teach our sons and our daughters the fear of the Lord, the honor of the Lord. Start with this house. Not a playground. This is the house of God. This is the sanctuary. And we teach them to fear God and to honor God and to give God the best of our lives. Maybe give them the best of our young people, the best of our family, the best of everything. See, our God is worthy. He's worthy of our sons and daughters. Isn't he? I'll tell you this. He's worthy of more than the leftover part of my day. You know what I'm saying? I'm squeezing a 2-minute Bible study before I go to bed. He's worthy of more than that. And you make an effort. And that's what he said. How do you live life wisely? You realize the fear of the Lord, that'll bring great blessing and reward. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the teaching of your